So in the space of like about a week and a half, she's managed to tan about three seasons. Awesome.
And as the music fades once more, we are back. Good welcome, good welcome, good morning, good welcome one and all. Welcome back to the Unsalted Popcorn Podcast, Doctor Who Watch Along Directionless Commentary Special, brought to you by three idiots, one in a hat. You can entirely guess this week which is the idiot in the hat. The idiot in the hat actually wore it on a work Zoom call this morning without thinking about the fact it says Rebel Scum across the top.
That's fine, but it does also say vegan, so...
Yeah, I'm not sure which of the three words was the one that raised the most eyebrows in the team meeting.
But I'm going to just admit that I clearly misread that and sort of said Vegas. I was thinking it was like some bizarre in-joke that I wasn't getting with Vegas Rebel Scum.
Yeah, I'm completely against Vegas. I've never liked it. You will never. Actually, to be fair, Vegas would work as well because you never come across a bigger hive of scum and villainy.
Yep.
Anyway, on that note, we are here to watch Doctor Who. And when I say we, I of course mean over in the green room, it's Laura.
Hi.
Enthused and up for it. And over in the sunny Morganless corner, it's John.
Hello.
Who's clearly been drinking already. So... when we last convened, I can't remember what the hell we watched. I'm not looking at the list.
The snowmen,
that was it. And we had to deal with Clara.
Yeah, but we dealt with good Clara.
So what do we have to deal with now?
We have to deal with the transition to Dr. Clara.
Oh,
over the course of the next season and a half.
For anyone that doesn't know, Good Clara was an indie group from the early 2000s.
Dr. Clara wasn't that the offshoot band when they split up, and the singer tried McFly to go solo.
It was McFly to Busted.
Yeah, that was it. Yes.
Whereas we have suddenly become Doctor and the Cynics.
Hey! Do you know what? I might almost call that episode this episode that, or that episode this. Take your pick. Just to take a brief moment to say hello to our listener.
Hi.
Maybe Morgan will listen to this.
Oh, hang on. Can we just rewind 2 seconds? Can
we just rewind? We haven't started the episode yet, but let's rewind it.
I'm sure that won't annoy her further. That'd be absolutely fine. I forget which episode she recently caught up with the Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe.
Yes.
Oh yes.
I think she's
doing very well considering that's only like four episodes ago. That's very good.
I have a sneaking suspicion that she's not necessarily going through them systematically in order. I think there's a certain amount of dipping going on.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
I think you can forgive.
Unlike my mother, who's watching every episode and is now three seasons ahead of us.
I mean, at this point, I think your mother ought to take over the podcast.
Don't, she probably would. although the great thing is, before we started the podcast, I said she's not got a very good relationship with technology. The entire podcast, she's going, hello? Can you hear me? Right, that'd be quite entertaining.
Do you know what? I'd be up for that. It would just be 45 minutes of her going, oh, have I pressed the button?
as opposed to you doing it.
Lest we forget the missing episode.
Do you know what? I quite like this idea of doing this as a two-hander. Actually, can I mute one side of the conversation just to amuse myself? So way back in the day, he said, changing the subject to Doctor Who, this was the second half of the series, them having broken the series up for the first time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, did they not break up season six as well, no?
Yeah, season six was broken up.
Yep. I don't know. Hence,
the first half of season six ran from like April through May, and then it was September, October time.
Right. Hence, see, I didn't know. Hence, I phrased it as a question.
Yeah.
Rather than...
They basically finished with A Good Man Goes to War, and then you had to wait a few months till Let's Kill Hitler. And Stephen Moffat, I can't remember the exact kind of reasoning behind why they decided to do it, but Stephen Moffat, who could actually leave working for television and become like a political spin doctor, pretty much said, rather than saying we're splitting these seasons, he more or less came up with this propaganda tool of, and just remember, you're always only just a few months away from a new episode of Doctor Who.
Genius.
Yeah.
To be fair, that's the same line of spin that Chibnall's been using, because a few can mean up to 12 to 24.
You're only a few years away from a new episode of Doctor Who.
I'm going to defend Chibnall at this point, just slightly, because I don't think even he can be blamed for the pandemic. I'm not saying categorically.
There was a year-long gap after Jodie's first series.
Yeah,
there was.
Pandemic.
There was. Although maybe he was just, in a way, he was very kindly preparing us for the pandemic by stripping us of everything we loved for a year.
Which then makes no sense, because we've just passed a year since the last series finished, but they're almost into post-production now for season 13.
Hey!
Yeah, there is that small point.
Yeah.
I tried.
Between
honestly,
series 12 and series 13 is actually going to be less than series 11 and series 12.
Sorry, Chibbers, I tried. I tried to help.
Don't call him Chibbers, it only encourages him.
little did they know that it was the only thing that he's actually... The big gap between season 11 and season 12 was the only thing that he's ever done. That all of these kind of angry Doctor Who fans that hate Chibnall actually appreciated it. They just said, oh fantastic. We had to wait an entire year and a... You know?
I'm glad you brought that up, because you and I have both been having, I'm going to say fun, because I can't think of a better word, this week with, and again, I'm going to use the only word I can think of that explain it, but it doesn't fit the true sense of the word, fans of the show.
Yeah.
Who genuinely...
Sorry, I've got subtitles on, and I wanted to see if the way that you just pronounced fans would automatically put fans in inverted commas. And it didn't.
Oh, that's...
It
didn't. That's,
I was waiting then.
That's
I was waiting.
Disappointing. That really is. But we encountered a guy this week, and this I loved him. I loved him to bits, so much so I almost give up my no-claims bonus to run him over. His basic argument was the Timeless Child, as we all know, has completely ruined Doctor Who forever for everyone. And he doesn't want stories retcon-fitting Doctor Who history or rewriting Doctor Who history unless he likes the story, in which case it's fine. Creating the problem that he has to know whether the story is going to be any good or not before he can decide whether it should go ahead. And when I pointed out to him that he was basically saying that he had to like it first before it could happen, he had a go at me and said he wasn't going to fall for my, and I quote, logic trap.
Yes.
so basically what he's hoping is that he'll get a little bit of a nod before the episode airs from the production team, basically informing him that, yes, this is the series where the Doctor starts using slurs against minorities. That's what he's after.
Yes. Basically, yes. He in a way, he actually wants to be able to travel forward in time to watch it, to come back and go, don't worry, guys, it's all good.
But he won't do that.
No. It's just, how you carried on with that, I don't know.
In the end, he stopped talking to me. When he pretty much, there was points where I was coming back to everything he said, and then someone just came on and said, no, blah, 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 blah. And then I just said, all right, okay, I must be wrong then. And then people stopped talking to me.
they didn't get the irony and sarcasm in that at all, did they?
They probably thought, oh, well, that's him learnt his lesson then.
Yeah.
He didn't like the fact that when they said that The Timeless Child is a retcon to the point it's almost a reboot. And I said, it isn't. And then they kept going. And then I pretty much said, if it is, then that means the show was also rebooted in 1966 and possibly twice in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came right back at me and continued. And then they said, that's not the case, blah, blah, blah. I said, you've just made my point. And they didn't like that
because that
probably too tried to get them in a logic trap.
I think it was, definitely. I think my favourite moment was the guy who said... and this actually will bring me to another thing in a second. He said that he's now going to watch the show. He's been watching it continuously since 1963.
Yep.
Which I'm guessing means he watched an awful lot of reruns for an awful lot of years to make it continuous.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's not going to be doing anything else, is he?
No, not that you notice. But he did prove useful because that Doctor Who quiz I sent over, where I got all 12 questions right. Woohoo!
He did mention the fact that the show had been running since 1963.
Yeah. What year did the show launch? And I went, oh yeah, that was 63. Boop.
And it's actually a disgrace that you didn't know that anyway.
Well, yeah, but you know me, I wasn't around then, no matter what some people claim. And I forget stuff and I don't pay attention to that much detail. I can list you all, what are we coming to conclude, 15 doctors, was it?
It was 15 official doctors, like the amount of official James Bonds that they have that don't include David Niven, you know?
Yeah, this is it. So because that, again, going back to that question, I worked out they were probably 15, but you could also tack in about another 3 or 4 if they wanted to count that, or you could count less than that if you wanted to exclude some. So when 15 was the one answer that fitted any of the maths you came up with, that had to be the only answer.
Absolutely. There was actually the option for 12, and I thought that maybe it was written by an absolute kind of Jodie Whittaker hater that said, there is only 12. Peter Capaldi died in the snow.
You wouldn't rule that out, would you? You wouldn't rule that out. Yeah, Doctor Who finished when Peter Capaldi died. Right, having alienated anyone who actually likes the show... let's crack on and actually watch this. So we are on The Bells of St. John. Mm-hmm. And if memory serves from the picture on the screen, this is where the Doctor gets a motorbike, isn't it?
This is where the Doctor learns to defy gravity. Well, sorry, Clara gets to defy gravity as well.
I've known some girls be able to do that.
That's literally the one thing I remember. It's one thing I remember from this episode. This is one of the episodes that I've only ever watched. Once.
Is this your only your second viewing of The Bells of St. John?
Of St. John. We've had my second ever viewing of The Doctor, a couple of weeks ago. This will be my second ever Bells of St. John.
And then...
we're going to have next my second ever viewing of The Rings of Akkatan.
You really are just... you put those on the list just to double your numbers, didn't you?
Like the second half of series 7. I'm sorry.
But Laura, do you not think it's quite nice that Clara manages to defy gravity in this episode, having really failed to do it the week before?
Yeah.
Wine and it gets spilled everywhere. Right.
There is a bit in this episode which I thought they're not going to do this, are they? And then they didn't. And I'll probably talk to you about it when it happens. But we'll get to it. Let's watch the episode since we've now had about 40 minutes of not watching the episode.
We're well into the TARDIS doors opening during the intro now as well, aren't we? We had it on the snowman. We didn't mention it on the snowman, but we had mentioned it before.
Oh,
it's my
favourite
Doctor Who time vortex introduction scene. This,
yeah, because you get
even with the addition of Matt Smith's face.
Well, I was about to ask: do we know what colour or how dark this is at this point? Is it one of the lighter, frothy openings, or is it a darker opening?
Oh, it's the same as when we have with the snowman.
I've slept and drunk since then.
The difference is it's just got the TARDIS doors, these horrible CGI TARDIS doors coming towards you in the TARDIS, obviously on the TARDIS, at the end. And then they open up at the start of the episode, and I hate it.
Excellent. Oh, I can't wait for this then. I'm just going to be staring at my screen watching Nora's face and the doors open and she goes...
it's terrible CGI. It looks awful.
Angry Laura face.
Right. I was just going to say, I'm just going to keep going on about the beginning sequences. And I don't know if you remember, they did a kind of someone came up with a kind of fan-made idea for how they wanted Capaldi's beginning sequence to be. And I think Stephen Moffat or somebody caught wind of it and they actually used it. And the fan-made version is still better than the one actually made the BBC, in my opinion.
Which, as we now know, is moot and wrong. So that's fine.
Absolutely.
Right, are we ready, chaps?
Let's do it.
In that case...
Moot and wrong, incidentally, comes up as Luton wrong, as in the town of Luton.
Well, Luton is wrong.
I'm going to turn these subtitles off, wrong. I'm sorry.
I think that's perfectly accurate. Luton is wrong, that's fine. All right, dear listener, as ever, when we press play, you press play, and we will talk you through the finer points of... I've already forgotten what this episode is called because I don't care enough. The Bells of Thingy.
Bells of St. John.
Thank you. The Bells of St. John in 3, 2, 1, and play.
Oh, my God. I started at the right time for once.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh, I do quite like that nighttime, earthy, everything connected thing. That was quite fun.
Yeah. This is the whole... Well, fucking hell! This worked for series one of Sherlock. Let's try it in Doctor Who.
That sounds reasonable.
By putting words on the screen.
Yep.
And this is pretty much Moffat now for the rest of his run.
It shows where we're at in life today. I'm seeing all these streets full of people not wearing masks, and I'm getting a bit.
Yeah.
It's wrong.
It's strange how much things, how we've just become used to things.
Yeah.
Like when I was picking my son up from school today, I was aware of the fact there were a couple of people in the school playground not wearing masks, and it freaked me out.
Totally. Oh, wearing a mask. That's fine. We can relax. Genuine question, are these sort of, are all these shots just GV shots, not that obviously, or are they all extras? Are they just random street scenes filmed and then someone scurried after them and got permission?
Who knows?
Well, obviously not us, so okay.
I just feel like if anyone's coming on with all your Doctor Who questions answered, possibly this isn't the podcast for you.
That's very true. We're not here to answer your questions. We're here to ask new ones. And then complain about gravity.
One of us should approach Toby Haybeck to come in and be a guest for the 50th or something. Because I'm sure Toby would do it. I mean, I've only met him once. He didn't really like me.
I think he would. I think he'd be up for that. I could drop him a line and ask him. He actually genuinely said to me when he saw me have a horrendous gig at the blue thingy in Liverpool before it closed. And I found out later I was barred from there because of that gig.
Wow.
Well, I got heckled by an idiot in the front row in Liverpool.
Here we go.
Oh, God, those doors are bad, aren't they? I got heckled in the front row and I thought, and I kicked back and insulted the guy because he heckled me. So what else do you do? Apparently that's not allowed. And they banned me for abusing the audience. But Toby did like me enough to offer me a spot at XS Malarkey. I will at some point get around to sending in that email.
It's a lovely gig, that is.
Apparently so. I still have yet to actually send in the email and ask for the spot Toby said he'd love to offer me 8 years ago.
Good things are going to happen. I can feel it.
Yeah, it's a matter of time. This is my year. The tour's going to come off. I'm going to get that sitcom. I've written this brilliant joke about George Foreman grill. It's going to be great.
Maybe you should just film it, stick it online, see what people think.
Oh, I could do that. I need to go to my eyebrow workshop first, because I can't wiggle them enough yet. My eyebrow work isn't strong enough for a wrongly filmed YouTube clip.
We can get Morgan to do it.
Yes, actually, it would work really well with Morgan.
It would, because when all the comments need posting afterwards and they all need to be horrifically racist, then Morgan's the right person for the job.
And you'd probably do it with the accent.
I don't think there's anything problematic about doing a Hull accent.
Well, other than the fact it makes people think you come from Hull.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's a result. She's not here tonight because she's been cancelled.
Actually, talking of that very thing, John, you will know who this is, because by law you're Scottish and you have to know him. Fish off of Marillion, as was way back in the day, who's now a very perfectly successful businessman and solo artist. He does a Fish on Friday thing on YouTube, on Facebook. And he danced around in a Native American headdress for about a couple of minutes, referencing some song and some story and all the rest of it.
Who goes onto their computer and the first thing they do is look to which not Wi-Fi network they're connected to?
Me, if I'm in someone else's house.
Yeah.
But if it's where I work and live, yeah, not so much. So he did that. And then someone somewhere told the tabloid. Tabloid wrote a takedown piece on it. Fish came out and went, really sorry, shouldn't have done it, didn't think about it, really bad, won't do it again. It's all cultural appropriation is wrong, etc. and so on. And was just completely open on his hands up and went, it was a dumb thing to do and I shouldn't have done it and I won't do it again and I'm really sorry. I've learned from it. Which should have been fine.
Yeah.
Apart from several of his fans leapt into his defence, saying he shouldn't have to apologise, even though he was quite happy to, because this is all just cancel culture and they were now going to cancel Fish. They weren't going to cancel Fish. Brilliant. I love it. Are you Egyptian? Mm. And it was me, Michael Legg, the comedian, and Steve McLean, the comedian, who were basically arguing against Fish fans who were defending him for apologising willingly about something he thought was wrong.
Yeah.
It's just the internet just seemed to be quietly eating itself. And they kept saying, oh, this is just cancel culture. No one was cancelling Fish. He willingly apologised off his own back because he knew he'd done a wrong thing and he was fine with it and he just wanted to grow from it and learn from it and move on. And there were so many people wading in saying, you shouldn't have to say sorry, but I want to say sorry. But you shouldn't have to, but I want to. No, you shouldn't have. Fucking hell.
I know. Idiots everywhere.
It just seems to have been a week for it, though, doesn't it? And it's only Wednesday.
Oh, I've just realised that because of what I just did now, for some bizarre reason, we've like inverted the podcast in that Laura's the only one not wearing a hat tonight.
Which is normally the other way around.
Yeah.
Going back to Laura's point, just bring it back on thing. If that's your home network, mm-hmm. why do you then have to type in your password?
Because sometimes it does that to be a bastard. And then you go, I've not typed this in 4 years. How am I supposed to remember it?
This is it. I mean, I know it does occasionally drop out completely and you have to forget it, but there's no way.
Is she not babysitting? No, this isn't Clara's house.
No, it's where she works as a nanny, isn't it?
Yeah. She's trying to get in on the Maitland families. I mean, but you'd still just be able to press a button on the router.
Yeah. Unless we did
miss a little something earlier on when Clara was talking about the book. It was like somebody was reading a book and it was written by Amelia Pond. I think it's called Summer Falls or something like that. And it's basically Amy, after leaving the doctor in the 1930s, leaving the doctor's if she's the choice. Leaving the doctor in the 1930s became a successful novelist.
I think that does make an awful lot of sense.
So it's very brief, and it's like a 5-second scene, and the BBC released the book.
I do need to get that.
You can actually buy it from BBC Books.
I do now need to get that, definitely.
Ah, the first instance of there being no chemistry between these two whatsoever.
Well, he is a monk.
Yeah, but monks love it.
Yeah, well, monks love it. There we go. this episode should be called Monks Love It.
Yes. Doctor Who, the monks who love it.
The meddling monk.
Why does she have a necklace that looks like it's either Wonder Woman or Batman? And equally, I'd forgotten Celia Imrie was in this. I now want Victoria Wood to turn up.
She's not already dead at this point.
Nah, that's 2016.
Yeah.
I'm losing track of when this is.
2012.
Oh, God, of course that's because it's before the 50th anniversary. Laugh at it.
In your own time, John. In your own time.
Yeah, John, just to point out, the 60th anniversary is 2 years away.
Yeah, and okay, God, this is 9 years old, this episode.
God, it is, isn't it? Yeah. It's weird to think, because I still kind of think of this as only being a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Any episode we watch.
Put it another way, if we were going from the original run to where we are now in terms of time,
yep,
we are just at the point where everybody's starting to get fed up of Tom Baker.
That's
how far in we are.
Wasn't that the second series?
Only two series from the end, just when everyone's just like, meh.
Speaking of Tom Baker, I rewatched the 5-ish Doctors the other day, which obviously I for once doing some homework ahead of a podcast. Who saw that coming, eh?
I know, gosh.
And I'd forgotten the bit they do in trying to call Tom Baker. And they just take out the bit that is in the 5 Doctors.
Yeah.
And then it's his phone going off as a little spinny thing comes around and knocks him off. It's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Because we've got that to look forward to. Because we are doing that, aren't we?
We are. I am looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to everything I'm looking forward to everything which isn't this series, with the exception of the name of the Doctor. Name of the Doctor through to Time of the Doctor. Yes. That's what I'm looking forward to. We've just got to get through
some shit first.
3 episodes first?
Well, look,
Akatan and Nightmare on Silver. That's all we've got to get through.
Oh, God, Nightmare on Silver, bloody hell.
think of it as the bits you want are the school holidays. But the 3 episodes you can't stand are the last 3 weeks of term. And you know it's going to be shit. You know you're going to hate it. But the running around in a sunny field is just over there.
The only way Nightmare on Silver could have been worse so is if it was the third part of the James Corden trilogy.
That's true. Yes.
Which, again, I still admit, I really... There we go again. Summer Falls by Amelia Williams.
Yep.
Just can't let go, can you? Got to keep on. Got to keep on referencing.
It's all got to be exorcist. It's all got to be exorcist now, isn't it?
Did they not call these something stupid like the spoon men or something?
The spinny headed dish people.
I can't remember. Monks are not cool. God. Can't believe Matt Smith said that. It should be cancelled forthwith.
Yep, totally. Monks are people too. Why do we have to go through another Doctor
Get... Subtitles. Monks are not cool. God can't believe my ex-wife said that it should be cancelled forthwith. What did you say, John?
I can't even remember. It was minutes ago, seconds ago.
It's about your ex-wife.
I've always liked John. Shh. I've always liked John's ex-wife.
She's in the next room. She doesn't know I've filled the paperwork out yet.
That box with the bow tie kind of reminds me of Baldrick's slug in a box in Black Lives Goes Forth.
Yes. The 3 twerps or 1 twerp short again. Are we chucking in, or can we chuck in a case of fatal death? Does that
the curse of fatal death?
The curse of fatal death. Does that fit in anywhere?
Well, yeah.
Pre Eccleston.
Yeah, it's 1999.
Oh, so we'd have to go back and do it.
If we're doing that, then we've got to do the EastEnders one as well.
Oh God!
There's an EastEnders one.
Yeah, Dimensions and Time.
The 1993 one.
I haven't seen that.
Oh no, you must have done. It's got the Ranny in it.
No, I haven't seen that. No, not knowingly.
It was the 30th anniversary.
Oh dear!
Special.
It was
an interactive episode.
Oh God!
Yeah. I think John, you've mentioned this on here before, haven't you? Because it's the one where they filmed two. They seem to have filmed two different.
It ended with a cliffhanger, and they kept kind of hyping it up and saying that you got to decide how the story was going to unfold, and it ends with a cliffhanger, and then it was absolute genius in my opinion because it was something silly like. So the lines are open now, so you can decide what happens in the next episode. It was like, do you want the Doctor to be saved by Bianca or Big Ron? I can't remember if it was Bianca, because I mean, literally the only two, but definitely one of them was Big Ron. And then, of course, I think Big Ron won it. And then the next episode was Big Ron just turned around going, "Hey, what's going on here?" And then the Doctor managing to escape, and it's just a really shitty bridging scene.
Brilliant.
And then the story continued as normal. It was fantastic.
So if Curse of Fatal Death is obviously not canon, then that's fine. Is Dimension in Time considered by some to be canon?
I don't think there's anything that happens in Dimensions in Time that stops it being canon, apart from the fact that the Doctor Who has referenced EastEnders.
Yeah, I know. For it to take place in the same universe as EastEnders, but also show Peggy on screen telling the ghost of the Sideman ghost of Den Watts to get out of a pub.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Wouldn't it be great if Dimensions in Time be ruled as canon, thus made the whole of New Who non-canon?
That would be amazing.
Oh, like, that's where it split off.
Yes.
That'd be amazing.
So actually, we can then go back to that point. Say all this happened in a parallel universe, and then we go again. That would be amazing, because then you'd have even more lives, or less lives, or fewer lives, depending how you wanted to play it. That'd be fantastic. People would lose their shit.
It could, in theory, mean that Sylvester McCoy gets another appearance and another regeneration scene.
Yay!
Who doesn't want to see that?
Indeed, with his gurning.
Yes. Does the Doctor like Jammy Dodgers?
Oh yeah, that's a face of someone that likes Jammy Dodgers.
Yeah.
Don't just leave it there. That's now infecting the other Jammy Dodgers.
That's wrong.
But that's quite good. What he's done there is ensured that no one else is going to eat them, and then he gets to keep all the Jammy Dodgers for himself.
And the plague. How old is Clara meant to be then? Oh, there's no way she's only 24. Shove off.
I mean, I think she was born in like 85 or something. So again, she's playing younger than she is, I think.
I refuse to believe that anybody.
I think she's like 28, 29.
I don't believe anybody.
She's not that much
younger
than me.
I don't believe anybody was born in 85. If you weren't born in the 70s, you don't exist. It didn't happen.
Fine.
She's gone.
Where is she gone?
I think because you said she doesn't exist.
She's hiding herself now.
She'll come back.
I always come back. 1986, Jenna Coleman.
Oh, right, so you were doing research. I thought you'd gone.
So she was 26.
I thought you were making a point.
No, I did. Right, fine, fuck you, I don't exist anymore.
So, I did not know she was from Blackpool. I did not know that.
I don't think it's something she advertises.
No, you wouldn't.
So actually, she's only playing 2 years younger than herself, which isn't that big much of a stretch, and is quite normal for the, is quite rare for the BBC. Almost same age.
No further questions, Your Honour.
Yeah. No then.
Other thing I meant to mention, there's a guy somewhere in Norfolk who has, I mean, there are lots of them as it happens, but this particular one has a full size, certainly from the outside, TARDIS. But he's now, okay. It's now up for sale.
I'd suggest it's definitely just on the outside.
He wants $4,000 for it because he says he hasn't got room for it.
Wow.
$4,000.
He built it himself, to be fair, but $4,000.
I know someone who managed to just replace their doors that led from their lounge to their kitchen with the TARDIS exterior doors. And that cost them like £80.
Yep. Like, this is a full-on proper shed as a TARDIS thing. It's
no.
I mean, obviously,
my front door's painted blue and I'm happy enough with that.
There's also a full-size Dalek coming up for auction, guide price £600 to £800.
There used to be in Lyne near Stourbridge, I think there still is a shop there, which is like a bric-a-brac shop. And for years, in the window, they had a jukebox, but the jukebox was shaped to the exact specifications of a Dalek. That was like £8,000. But it was a Dalek jukebox. It was there for years. Nobody ever bought it.
Apropos of nothing, how much can you get for kidneys on the black market?
I don't know if it's still there. I mean, I could Google Street View the place to see if the place still exists, but I'm talking years ago.
I have to say that if I gave Tanya the specifications for a TARDIS, she'd probably build one for me for a lot less than £8,000.
Probably would, actually.
Yeah, but how much would she charge you?
Well, she'd probably build.
Just need to make tea for a year.
Oh, if that's all, then she can get her ass down here. I'll even throw in biscuits.
Can we just say that human souls trap like flies in the World Wide Web, other than being a slight rip-off of Silence in the Library,
yep.
And other stories as well, obviously.
Yep. Like,
you know, like The Matrix, for example, or anything that came before that The Matrix ripped off.
I was going to say,
this could have been a much better story had it not just been the Doctor trying to convince. I think this is my issue with this episode.
Okay.
Is this is effectively the Doctor grooming. That's all this episode is the Doctor grooming. Because long ago, the Doctor saw someone who looked like this person, and now he's trying to convince her that she should run away with him. That's effectively what this entire episode is, with a subplot of Wi-Fi.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
Which is a number one tool for grooming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't think you can suggest that they're ripping off The Matrix, because that itself was a rip-off, so you've got to go back one.
I did mention. Just going back, because I do remember the lawsuits.
Basically, they're just ripping off a James Blunt song, which is somehow worse.
That's definitely worse.
The whole concept of Doctor Who is just ripping off James Blunt. I mean, which one came first?
Blunt?
Well, I don't think James Blunt has ever actually, that we know of, spent a night outside a young woman's house with a laptop trying to persuade her to get in his box. I don't think.
Are we talking James Bond or James Blunt's name?
Blunt. James Blunt.
Either.
Okay, no. James Bond. There are lots of. It's had 60 years of, there's only been like 23 films. That's only approximately 46 hours of actual. Us seeing James Bond being James Bond, doing James Bondy things.
Yes.
So who's to say, in his off time, he hasn't just stalked outside with a laptop? And as for James Blunt, he's definitely done it.
You're beautiful.
Ping. Can we just not, just for a night, just for an evening, can we not give our lawyers a heart attack? And by our lawyers, I mean John, because he's the one who has heart attacks for a living. I mean, I get. I might. I don't. I tread carefully because I don't want to give anything away because spoiler, sweetie. But we're also assuming everyone's already watched everything. They kind of create the impossible girl thing around this, don't they? So is it?
Yeah.
So he's kind of gone after her because not just because he saw a cute girl, a cute woman, and thought, I know, let's have a bit of that in the TARDIS. He thinks there's some inextricable, eternal link forever.
Yeah, he absolutely does. I mean, Lana's made it sound creepy because
and reasonably so. Yeah. But my point more was that they were doing weird, creepy, and slightly pervy, but in the same way as the timeless child, they're trying to create an overreaching mystery archy thing to create more depth to an already shallow character.
Mm-hmm.
And not that it works, but
did they I can't even remember now. Did they ever get to the bottom of who gave Clara the doctor's number?
It was Missy, wasn't it? I thought that gets addressed in series 8.
I think it does, yeah.
I thought, do you know, I was thinking Missy, and then I was thinking, is that just because somebody suggested that online?
I think it is stated, the woman in the shop,
right?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, it is.
I think it's stated by Missy. I think it might be at the start of series. Ooh. I think it's at the start of series 9. I think it's when the planes are stopped above them. They're having that conversation around that table.
Yeah, because there's that whole.
I think it's there.
There's that whole flash. There's a whole series of flashbacks to where Missy was linking in to the Doctor's life and moving things around in the background to create where they ended up to at that point.
Yeah. That's quite interesting. I mean, in my head, I was, because my first thought was Missy, and I was thinking that it was probably, I'd read some post about it online where somebody'd gone into detail about how it must have been Missy. But if we'll get to it. If Laura's right about it being the beginning of season 9, the interesting thing about that was Clara wasn't going to come back for series 9, remember? And she changed her mind at the last minute. Yeah, so does that mean that would never have been answered?
Throwaway line? Yeah.
Yeah.
Smoffit.
It would be completely unlike him to create a story arc and then just wander off and forget about it.
Yeah.
There's no way the Doctor had a motorbike in the back of the TARDIS.
It was from that guy in the TV movie, 1996.
Ah, that was it, yes. Are we going to do at some point, I think we said we might, the two Doctor Who movies starring Peter Cushing?
I would love to do that.
We'll do that.
Good, because there's a bit at the end with Bernard Cribbins that I really want to talk about. But it's better to talk about it when it's on screen and then I can really let rip.
It's in Death in Heaven. It's at the end of Series 8.
Okay, that's it. So that would be fine then, because Clara was supposed to be in that one.
Yeah.
This is all a bit. This is one of those episodes, isn't it, where it doesn't really feel like anything matters when you go back to it. And you watch it at the time, you get wrapped up in it, you get caught up in it, and you're, oh, this is all really exciting and new and everything else. But when you look back at it, this really is one of the filler episodes, isn't it?
This one, to an extent, reminds me slightly of Partners in Crime. You know, you've got this kind of, you know, you've got this kind of organisation that are doing this, that, the next thing, blah, blah, blah. And then it doesn't really matter because it's all about the Doctor and Donna getting back together. Whereas this one almost, to an extent, tries to emulate that, but has none of the chemistry that Tennant and Tate had.
And it's clear there, isn't it? And going off a mild tangent, are the Shard and St. Paul's that close together?
Yes.
Okay.
But the Shard hadn't actually opened at this point.
But had it been built?
It was still in process. I think a lot of this is CGI.
I was going to say, because that's not... I mean, that's clearly not... They're not outside, because there's not much... There's not enough breeze for them to be outside. And that's not a slightly out-of-focus St. Paul's. That's a slightly out-of-focus green screen of St. Paul's. So I don't think the angles are right for where those two buildings are.
Whereas I couldn't possibly comment.
My knowledge of London buildings is sketchier than it used to be.
Well, we had a conversation a couple of months ago when I saw an episode of Bones and I was getting het up over the positioning of London Bridge and where
yes.
the characters were sitting because they were out having a drink somewhere, whereas I knew that particular location was just a walkway and they just put some tables there
yep.
for some lovely television magic.
That's the one.
But if you know the area, then you know that it's bollocks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, funny enough, because I remember that conversation, because that then led to my rant about the book that stopped me reading any more James Patterson novels, which is London Bridges. And there's a passage, he'd got into that whole horrible, nasty, dropping in pop culture references to make himself look trendy. Alex Cross was always listening to the latest cool CD as seen by James Patterson. And it was horrible. It jarred and it just didn't flow.
Yeah, I know. Colin Dexter did that when Moore started listening to Britpop, so, you know.
Yeah, but Moore was allowed to have a midlife crisis. He was dating someone half his age and he'd just discovered the guitar. You know, fair enough. But there's a scene in the book where he books himself into his hotel, and from his hotel room, he can see four clear London landmarks. None of which could be seen as a four from a single solitary hotel room window. And he clearly just sat down in his beach house in Florida or wherever he writes shit and decided, I need to let everyone know we are definitely in London. What are the famous landmarks in London? Excellent.
I can
right.
see the Houses of Parliament right next door to St. Paul's Cathedral, right next door to...
You've read the book. Yeah, you basically, that is exactly what happened. And he says, just by
all
reading...
All three located within St. James's Park.
It's just so clearly it was just done for the sake of book sales or the future film deal.
By the time I got to London Bridges, I was already hate reading James Patterson.
I was getting there, but that was the one that killed him off for me. And then I thought I'd try the Murder Club.
Oh, yeah, the Cursed Wives Club or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I got three into that, two or three into that, and it went down exactly the same road.
Yeah, he's not a very good, in my opinion, not a very good writer.
Well, the annoying thing is, early on, with... Kiss the Girls and Along Came a Spider, those first three or four, absolutely barnstorming thrillers. Absolutely fantastic. And then, like I said, just goes off a cliff. He hits a formula and just sticks to it.
And boy, does he stick to it. It's just, it's the little chapters for me. It's like, I went to the shops and I picked up a latest copy of such. I went back to the house. What was waiting for me back at the house was an absolute shock chapter two.
Yep.
and then you're just like, fucking hell. It was by the numbers.
It really was.
And when I sounded slightly patronising and childish when I read that chapter out, that's because that's how I read it.
Yep, can't argue with that. I've realised as well, looking back on it, now you've said that, there are actually issues with how he started writing Alex Cross. Because as we know, James Patterson is an old grumbly white guy.
Yeah.
But all the cultural references and stuff he was trying to shoehorn in, Alex Cross likes playing basketball. He listens to the latest blues or jazz CD. And it was just by the book, things he thought a 45-year-old black guy would do.
Yeah.
Not just the character. He decided to go for all the cliches and tropes he could find. And it just got so bad. Because the interesting is, Lee Child, he's kind of got a formula.
Yeah.
In that Jack Reacher is a big bloke bit ugly, occasionally gets the girl, just wanders everywhere on his own. But he somehow manages to write each book slightly differently, different angles, different things happen. It's all the same basic thing, but the character is well enough written and it's not jarring yet anyway. I'm only about halfway through the series. He seems to have kept
some development as well, whereas I always find Alex Cross is a bit stagnant. He basically has a girlfriend for about four books and then they break up. He'll get a new girlfriend, probably meet the old girlfriend again at some point. There's a wee bit of a frisson between them, but nothing. And also, did the gran ever die? Because she was about 140.
I think she did.
Right, okay. I'd be quite interested because like there was a point where every couple of books she nearly dies.
Yes.
Just because she's old. And then she was like, oh, you gave us a bit of a fright there, Nana. And then she was back.
Actually, there was one. Well, I'd forgotten that was the Doctor. There was one where she did almost die, but that was because the bad guy got to her. But Alex saved her just in time, and she was a bit feisty and fought back.
Yeah.
Even though she was 174, three hips, and could only move her nose, she still managed to fight her way out of the problem.
Anyway, I feel like we've just gone off on a James Patterson tangent now.
We have, but to a certain extent, that's more interesting than what's going on the screen at the moment.
Absolutely. This is a bit that I was actually going to talk about, just weirdly enough, was the fact that I just thought, you know, you've got the first episode of this second half of season 7, and I just thought, have they just killed Clara again?
I would have taken that.
if
every single episode in series second half of series 7 had been the Doctor trying to stop the death of Clara over and over again, I would have said that
would have been awesome. I would have loved if Clara had become Kenny out of South Park.
Oh look, there's the shard. Where's St Paul's? No sign of St Paul's there.
Just a wee sign there that Matt Smith again just is looking older again. Mm. And he just actually looks like a crotchety old man there. And he's in his early 30s at this stage.
Yep. But he does look exactly like.
He's still in his 20s.
A middle aged man. He looks exactly like a middle aged man having a midlife crisis with a motorbike.
His birthday is October 1982, so yeah, he would still have been in his 20s.
Oh, come on, no one was born in 1992.
82.
Everything stopped in 70-something.
Do you know, this is, it looks like they could make a kind of on the buses kind of prequel called Young Blakey involving Matt. I'll get you, Butler. I'll get you, Davros.
The 65th floor, incidentally, of the Shard is all residential. There are no offices. There you go, fact.
See, this is the podcast where you get all the answers.
Hey, look at that. That's research. That's research and facts. And for both of those things, I can only apologise.
We'll never do it again.
He's already. I wonder if part of Jenna Coleman's problem, you know, we've talked about before how Alex Kingston can drop in and out and she knows exactly where River is in the grand sprawling timeline of her life. When she was playing an individual character in the previous two times we met her, she had a well-rounded character and that was it, done. So she was okay playing that, and she could bounce off that, and she could work with it. But then she suddenly has this character with more of an arc and more story, but she doesn't know what that story is. Is she being hampered? Maybe we're being a bit unfair that she's actually being hampered by the writing, that she can't invest fully in the character because she doesn't know where her character's going.
Well, I mean, that takes me back to the fact that I think Clara works better with Capaldi, and as a kind of side effect of that, That was basically.
Why didn't she run away?
What's that?
She knows what's happening. Just go out of the room.
But this particular story arc about Clara was resolved at that point.
Yes.
So that almost kind of makes sense with the fact she was possibly hampered by the story. Because I am adamant, I think Clara works really well with Capaldi.
She works much better with Capaldi, without a doubt. But like I said, she came into her own where she had to lead the line in Capaldi's first season. And that very much was more Clara's season than Capaldi's.
Yeah.
And we'll come to that and talk about it more. But that she clearly then stepped into it and she knew who she was meant to be again. And that, I think, is what worked well. And it's interesting that that's Robot Doctor, but it's not that much different to Normal Doctor. I think Matt is basically a machine. Although I had heard rumours, etc. and so on.
And I suppose to an extent we're actually treating this like a season opener, and it really isn't, anyway.
But it feels like, but it does feel like it is, in that it feels like it's setting out again, almost as with a new doctor and a new companion, even though we know the doctor and we have met the companion before.
Yeah.
It does kind of feel like they didn't really. It's. We said before, filler episodes exist in Doctor Who. You just have to live with it. You just don't expect to meet a filler episode at the start of a bit of a run.
Yeah. The problem is, again, I just think, you know, I don't think Stephen Moffat really thought this through to the same extent as he did with the previous seasons with Karen Gillan and Amy. It just felt like, you know, even if you look back, I mean, obviously, you know, great intelligence, blah, 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 exciting stuff. But when you look back at the way kind of Jenna Coleman acted in Asylum of the Daleks and The Snowman, are we supposed to think that she doesn't know the Doctor? I mean, I'm still not sure about this. When we get to this point later on and we find out what's happening,
yeah,
are all these kind of multiple Claras supposed to know the Doctor? Because you get evidence that she does in light of when she points out to William Hartnell, the Doctor, the first Doctor, that he should pick that TARDIS. And there's bits and bobs like that, and you're kind of going, well, she must have some sort of foreknowledge of the Doctor to
know
that.
Yeah, you see, that's where I think that was completely unknown at this point. And I think had she known that was going to be down the line, that she was there at the start and she nudged him and went, that one, mate, then she would have acted this very differently.
Yeah.
But she didn't know any of that until that was written. And it feels like he missed a beat somewhere in not knowing what the full arc was with her.
Yeah, I don't think he fully knew how he was supposed, you know, because I think he would have said, play it like this. But there seems to be evidence that Clara does know all these kind of separate legs, and then there's evidence that she doesn't.
This is
because
it.
Because even things like the run you clever boy and remember seems to indicate that she kind of had a knowledge of what was going on. And
yeah.
Important,
well, this is the thing, isn't it? Because putting the message on the painting suggests knowledge and that's going to be found and there's a message to him, etc. and so on. Yet you hit this and she's never met him before.
Yeah.
And the two things just aren't quite marrying up at this point.
You did catch that the computer password was YB, basically the initials of When You Clever Boy and Remember 123.
Ah.
You did catch that, didn't you?
Well, I saw, I did see it was on the screen and I figured it must be something because you wouldn't normally see the password. But yeah, I didn't see it long enough. I think we were talking about something more important.
Yeah, that's one of these things. I think at the time we were like, ooh. But now, I've pretty much not watched this episode at all. I've just went, oh, this bit.
This is the problem I have with this episode, is it doesn't hold your attention. You can dip in and out for 2 minutes and here and there and talk about James Patterson for 10 minutes and you haven't really missed anything.
Yeah.
I know we're good at going off a tangent and not talking about the Doctor Who we're watching, but this doesn't feel like there's much to watch.
The whole point was this was that, the Doctor getting to finally meet Clara from his perspective the third time from her perspective the first time.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it. And then there's the little sneaky revelation that it's the great intelligence is involved.
Yeah.
That's it.
Which I like that little touch.
Yeah.
But
oh, the leaf. Oh, God, the leaf.
You know, sometimes someone says something and you just know that that could be, in the same way as Bugger Bogner, their famous last words. And I just now have it in my mind the last thing Laura is ever going to say on this earth is, oh, the leaf.
The leaf. That'd be Laura's rosebud.
Yep. The bloody leaf.
The only thing this episode's missing is that it should have ended with Matt Smith running about that console saying, Doctor Who! Doctor Who!
Yeah.
You know, and it just feels like it should be a theme. Clara dies every week and every episode ends with Matt Smith laughing and saying his own show title.
That would have been absolutely fantastic. And I do agree that I think Clara dying every week would have been hilarious.
Yeah. Oh. And even now they should still have episodes where like the 13th Doctor just sitting reading a newspaper and the headline is Clara dies again.
Yes!
And of course, for season seven, Jenna Coleman was called Jenna Louise Coleman, and then they changed it for season eight.
Yes!
She's been called Jenna Coleman ever since.
They just keep killing... I'm not doing it. They just keep killing Clara.
How many different ways can you kill Clara? So
oh God, it's on the leaf. It's gone into the next episode. It's on the fucking leaf. I hate the whole leaf thing.
I was just thinking that.
I came into this world on the leaf.
So, in the general canon of all things Doctor Who, on the list of episodes, if you never watch them again, you won't be sorry. Where are we putting this one?
Fear Her.
No, because like even Fear Her and Love of Monsters have a certain I'm going to go back and watch that just to remember if it's as bad as I we remember. But that's just like no.
See,
I've got no.
I think
Love and Monsters and Fear. Oh, sorry.
I think with Love and Monsters and Fear Her, they're bad, but you got a sense that they knew what they were doing. Not necessarily that they meant it to be bad, but underneath all the crappy bits, there was still a sense that they were in charge of the story.
And there was an actual episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas this very much feels like just random scenes and a bad idea and a half-baked thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if we found out somewhere down the line that a better story had been written and didn't happen for some reason. And this was the one they wrote in their coffee break on a napkin. Because it just has that feel that they had... you know when you're writing... I'm going to say when you're writing your dissertation. I had never written one, so I'm kind of flying blind. But I assume when you're writing a dissertation, you need a really good introduction. And this feels like it's 5 to midnight... You've got 10 minutes to hand it in, and you suddenly remembered you hadn't written your introduction.
5 past midnight's a very strange time to hand in a dissertation.
I don't know when dissertations are handed in. I never did one. I wasn't that stupid. My degree course actually offered me a chance. Do you want to do a practical journalistic type 3 years and produce coursework and produce an actual body of work at the end? Or do you want to do an academic study of journalism? And I went, I'm going to piss around in a radio studio. Thank you very much.
Yes.
So... But you know what I mean? You're 10 minutes from deadline, you suddenly realise you haven't written the key part of the dissertation, and that is what you come up with. And it's weak. It's just nothing. It's just ephemeral. It's blur. It's blah. It's there. It's just... Nothing stands out from it. Even the bits where the spinny bitty thing at the top of the TARDIS starts spinning, that's done better in the Five-ish Doctors. And it's just nothing really stands out.
Well, what I was going to say earlier on was that the good thing in my eyes about Love and Monsters and Fear Her was we did it as a double dunner and used it as a good excuse to get pissed.
Can't argue with that.
And I mean, and that nostalgia element alone.
And sadly, because of what, because of the drinking sessions we've got coming up for some double episodes, we can't do that for the next two. Actually, can we? We could do a double header on Saturday and just get those two out of the way.
We could.
We could do.
I have a full wine rack. I'm in.
I don't have an issue with it at all. That's all good to me.
I think that might be the worst idea in the world, just to get them out of the way. Because when even John is going, oh my God, that episode, you know it's going to be bad.
The Rings of Silver.
Yeah. I mean, you couldn't have done all three because we'd have killed ourselves, but I think maybe Saturday should be spent getting those two out of the way.
Let's do it.
Right, good. Oh, that's a plan then. In that case, I don't feel the need to talk about this episode anymore whatsoever. go and buy yourself.
We're in Clara Land now for the next 2.5 series. That's what we need to know.
I mean, that just sounds like the shittest theme park ever, doesn't it? Welcome to Clara Land.
Well, welcome to Clara Land. She'll never leave.
Stop at the gift shop, buy a leaf. Oh God, it's going to be awful. Right, in that case.
Oh God, it's like I can just imagine this roller coaster, but the trajectory only goes down.
Yes, less roller, more coast. It's just a plummet.
We haven't even got to Danny Pink yet.
Oh Christ! Do you know, if I concentrate really hard and focus, I can actually forget Danny Pink existed, and then just go back to mithering about Rory.
The way that Series 9 padded out, it's almost like Danny Pink never existed anyway.
I just meant to say that, Clara's just like, oh well.
Oh well, boyfriend's dead.
Yeah, hi-dio, moving on. He wasn't exactly mourned
Clara
by anyone.
Seems to have an easier job of forgetting Danny than Amy did after Rory got thrown into the crack that actually erased them from existence.
That's very true. Right then, chaps, we shall reconvene on Saturday to get the two other shit episodes out of the way. In the meantime, over there it's been John.
Bye.
Over there it's been Laura.
Bye.
We're all off to burn leaves in fitting tribute. We shall see you very soon. Bye.